Hello. It is Thursday, October 24th. I'm Lodi Evola, and I'll be reading to you today from the front pages of the Hartford Courant and the New York Times. And we'll begin, as we always do, with a description of the pictures on both newspapers. The first paper is the New York Times. The top photograph looks to be about a 5x7. All of the photographs are in color. This shows a long line. In fact, the line goes around the building. Many men and women are standing under this overhang, all waiting in line to vote. And this line is in Black Mountain, North Carolina. This is all, of course, early voting. And off to the side, there's a news photographer, followed by a newsman holding a sheaf of paper. Looks as though they've just finished a newscast. The next picture looks to be about a 4x6. Shows Fernando Valenzuela, who was a pitcher for the LA Dodgers. And the photograph shows him looking up, and he's in his stance ready to pitch, one right leg up in the air. He was only 64. And the final picture, about a 2x2, maybe 3x3, but anyway, shows a campaign rally for Kamala Harris in Atlanta. And at the forefront, the crowd is hazy, but in the forefront, there's an African-American woman holding up a cell phone with a pink case, and right next to her, a white woman with her hand in the air, both of them with giant smiles on their faces in the Hartford Courant. A few photographs. The first of the top one, about a 3x5, shows Bridgeport City Council member Alfredo Castillo. This is at a celebration after Mayor Joe Ganim won his Democratic primary in January. And it's a crowd of mostly men, but there's a woman there, all with huge smiles and clapping and hugging one another. The major picture, again, at about a 5x7, shows a Chinook helicopter. All you're seeing is the outline, very cloudy sky, a long line going down, lifting what appears to be a giant bucket. And the helicopter is apparently lifting water from Silver Lake in Berlin to help control a fire on Lamentation Mountain. We will have that story. And the final photograph, again, about a 3x4 or 5, shows former President Donald Trump with his then Chief of Staff, John Kelly. This took place in 2018. President Trump is looking up, and John Kelly is looking down, speaking to him. Trump is seated. And with that, we'll go to our top stories today from the Times. Voters strain under deluge of untruths. The Democratic Party's vice presidential nominee has been falsely accused of sexually molesting students. The claims have been spread by a former deputy sheriff from Florida, now openly working in Moscow for Russia's propaganda apparatus, on dozens of social media platforms and fake news outlets. A faked video purporting to show one victim, creating fake people as a recurring Russian tactic, received more than 5 million views on X, a platform owned by the world's richest man, Elon Musk. Mr. Musk has not only leaned all in for the Republican nominee, former President Donald J. Trump, but he also used his platform to reanimate discredited claims about the validity of the election's outcome. Smears, lies, and dirty tricks, what we call disinformation today, have long been a feature of American presidential election campaigns. 2 weeks before this year's vote, however, the torrent of half-truths, lies, and fabrications, both foreign and homegrown, has exceeded anything that came before, according to officials and researchers who document disinformation. The effect on the outcome on November 5th remains to be seen, but it has already debased what passes for political debate about the two major party candidates, Mr. Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris. It has also corroded the foundations of the country's democracy, undermining what was once a shared confidence that the country's elections, regardless of who won, have been free and fair. Russia, as well as Iran and China, have gleefully stoked many of the narratives to portray American democracy as dysfunctional and untrustworthy. Politicians and influential media figures have in turn given foreign adversaries plenty of fodder to work with, inciting and amplifying divisiveness for partisan advantage. They do have different tactics and different approaches to influence operations, but their goals are the same. Jen Esterly, the director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency in Washington, said in an interview referring to foreign adversaries. Very simply, they're looking to undermine American trust in our democratic institutions and the election specifically, and to sow partisan discord. Numerous factors have contributed to the surge in disinformation, which Ms. Easterly and other officials have warned will continue far beyond Election Day. Social media platforms have helped to harden media ecosystems into distinct, disparate, partisan enclaves where facts contradicting preconceived narratives are often unwelcome. Artificial intelligence has become an accelerant. GOP's drive for early vote gains traction. Republicans have spent months and millions of dollars on an effort to push former President Donald J. Trump's most loyal supporters to change their mind about voting early. There is some evidence to suggest it's working. After polls opened on Tuesday in Wisconsin, some form of early voting has commenced in all seven of the swing states. As of Monday, 17 million people nationwide had already cast a vote. And there are initial indications that Republicans are showing up to the polls or returning absentee ballots with more gusto than in recent years. In many cases, Republican officials and canvassers on the ground are spurring their voters on with the same debunked conspiracy theories about fraud that Mr. Trump has used to sow doubt about the integrity of the count. They have done a better job of turning out their voters to vote early, said Sam Almy, a Democratic political strategist who tracks early ballots in Arizona. I think they realized that early voting is easy and convenient. It turns out your voters quickly, and they don't have to gamble on turning out all their voters on Election Day. It's a remarkable turnabout from 4 years ago when Mr. Trump had thoroughly demonized every method of voting that didn't occur in person on Election Day. As states expanded access to mail and absentee voting at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, Mr. Trump repeatedly discouraged his voters from taking advantage. He said mail ballots created, quote, chaos and confusion, end quote, and asserted without evidence that it would lead to, quote, election interference by foreign countries, end quote. Many of his supporters believed him, and Joseph R. Biden Jr. won, buoyed by Democratic dominance in early and mail votes. This year, Mr. Trump has offered a more muddled message on the various methods of voting, while others in his party worked overtime to reverse course. The Republican National Committee, with his daughter-in-law Lara Trump, now the co-chair, poured resources into programs that would encourage Republican voters to submit ballots early. I'm sorry, I lost my spot here. The former president himself voted early in the Florida Republican primary over the summer. Even so, Mr. Trump has kept up the attacks. Campaigning in Pennsylvania last month, he called early voting stupid stuff, moments after telling rally goers that they should start right away. the quiet, stubborn aversion to putting a woman in power. With less than 2 weeks left before Election Day, a big question is looming over the campaign for the White House, and it has nothing to do with the economy or the barrage of attacks between former President Donald J. Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris over judgment, character, and mental fitness. It is gender. The issue is rarely directly addressed by either of the candidates. Yet the matter of Ms. Harris's gender and her potential to make history as the country's first female president is defining the campaign, creating a contest that is, in ways overt and subtle, a referendum on the role of women in American life. Pro-Harris stickers plastered on bathroom stalls offer reminders, woman to woman, that their vote is private. Trump aides use sexualized epithets to deride liberal men as weak and effeminate. In poll after poll, a difference in voting patterns based on gender pervades every demographic group. And in quiet conversations, some female Harris supporters can't shake the uneasy feeling that men in their lives are struggling to support a woman, especially a Black and South Asian woman, even if they don't want to admit it. If she were a man, would this race be this close? Governor Janet Mills of Maine asked a clutch of Democratic women after campaigning for Ms. Harris in suburban Pittsburgh. Joyce Reynoso, one of those women, shot back, "Oh, she would have won 3 weeks ago." Those who have studied voting patterns for decades say they have never before seen a presidential race where gender is so central to the electoral prospects of either candidate, even in 2016, when Hillary Clinton became the first woman to capture a major party nomination. They cite a series of factors: Mr. Trump's well-documented denigration of women, Ms. Harris's barrier-breaking potential, long-standing sexist views about women in power, and perhaps most centrally, the Supreme Court's overturning of a constitutional right to abortion 2 weeks ago. 2 years ago. It's whack-a-mole. He's got to get some women so men can take him over the top. We've got to get some men so women can take her over the top, said Celinda Lake, a veteran Democratic pollster who has studied female voters since she wrote her master's thesis on the gender gap in the 1980 presidential race. Drug makers had a secret in Alzheimer's trials. By 2021, nearly 2,000 volunteers had answered the call to test an experimental Alzheimer's drug known as BAN2401. For the drug maker, I say, the trial was a shot at a windfall, potentially billions of dollars, for defanging a disease that had confounded researchers for more than a century. To assess the drug's effectiveness and safety, ISAY sought to include people whose genetic profiles made them especially prone to develop Alzheimer's. But these same people were also more vulnerable to brain bleeding or swelling if they received the drug. To identify these high-risk volunteers, ISAY told everyone that they would be given a genetic test. But the results, the company added, would remain secret. In all, 274 volunteers joined the trial without ISAY telling them they were at an especially high risk for brain injuries, files obtained by the New York Times show. One of them was Genevieve Lane, a 79-year-old resident of the Villages in Florida, who died in September 2022 after three doses of the drug, her brain riddled with 51 microhemorrhages. An autopsy determined that the drug's side effects had contributed to her death. Her final hours were spent thrashing so violently that nurses had to tie her down. Another high-risk trial volunteer died, and more than 100 others suffered brain bleeding or swelling. While most of these injuries were mild and asymptomatic, some were serious and life-threatening. This is a medication that has some significant side effects, and we need to be aware of them, said Dr. Matthew Schrag, the Vanderbilt University neurologist who assisted with Ms. Lane's autopsy. early last year. The Food and Drug Administration approved Eisai's Alzheimer's drug, marketed as Leqembi, saying its modest benefit, a slight slowing of cognitive decline for a handful of months, outweighed its risks. This past July, the agency approved a second similar drug, Kisunla. In a clinical trial, its maker, Eli Lilly, also chose not to tell 289 volunteers that their genetic profiles made them vulnerable to brain injuries. The Times found dozens experienced what Lilly classified as severe brain bleeding. North Korean troops aid Russia in war. U.S. calls move a sign of Putin's desperation. North Korea has sent troops to Russia to join the fight against Ukraine, a major shift in Moscow's effort to win the war, U.S. officials confirmed on Wednesday. Defense Secretary Lloyd J. Austin III called the North's presence a very, very serious, and that's in quotes, escalation that would have ramifications in both Europe and Asia. What exactly are they doing? Left to be seen, Mr. Austin told reporters at a military base in Italy after a trip to Ukraine. He gave no details about the number of troops already there or the number expected to arrive. Mr. Austin cast President Vladimir V. Putin's need for North Korean mercenaries as a sign of desperation. This is an indication that he may be in even more trouble than most people realize, he said. He went tin cupping early on to get additional weapons and materials from the DPRK, he said, using the abbreviation for the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, and then from Iran, and now he's making a move to get more people. But he said intelligence analysts were still trying to discern whether the troops were moving toward Ukraine. Ukrainian officials insist they are headed there, and Ukraine's defense minister was quoted on Wednesday saying he expected to see North Korean troops in Kursk, the Russian territory that Ukraine has occupied, in the coming days. Mr. Austin's statement came as American intelligence officials said they were preparing to release a trove of intelligence, including satellite photographs, that showed troop ships moving from North Korea to training areas in Vladivostok on Russia's east coast and other Russian territory farther north. For 2 weeks, there have been reports of the movements, fueled by the Ukrainian and South Korean governments, that over 12,000 North Koreans were training to fight alongside Russian soldiers. John F. Kirby, a national security spokesman at the White House, said on Wednesday that between early and mid-October, the United States tracked about 3,000 North Korean troops who were transported by ship from the North Korean port city of Wonsan to Vladivostok in Russia. Those troops have since been taken to three separate training sites in the Russian Far East, he said.